Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I am your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And today, I have something extra special for all of you listeners out there. My good friend, Ariel Kasten, has joined the show. Say hi, Ariel.
Hi, Ariel.
Okay, and I'll give you a better introduction in a second. So, Ariel and I have just launched a new podcast. Well, really, it's an old podcast, but it's a new version of an old podcast called Large Neutron Collider, which we will talk about more at the end of this episode. But I thought it might be fun to bring Ariel onto my show. It is not her first appearance on Tech Stuff.
No, we've talked about steganography and about armory and weapons before. So I feel like what we're going to talk about today is a little bit of a revisit.
Yeah, we're going to talk about science fiction and speculative fiction. Some of the stuff we'll talk about, you could argue, really falls more into the realm of fantasy than science fiction. But that all kind of gets lumped under the category speculative fiction. And we're going to talk about some of the stuff that appears, like the popular stuff that appears in speculative fiction, and then talk about what, if any, corollaries there are in the real world. And if we see any technologies that are kind of like the baby version of the stuff we see in sci-fi, or if we are leagues away from, light years away, you might say. And also, we made an outline for this that we thought at first was, you know, modest. It was
reasonable.
Decent. Yeah. It blew up. So we are going to go through as much of this as we can, but we're not going to turn this into a marathon length episode. We don't even know how long this is going to go. It may turn out that this will be a two-parter and I'll have Ariel back for part two. We haven't recorded it yet. So the time travel, spoiler alert, doesn't really work. So I can't tell you how long it's going to be until we do it.
Yeah.
Sad to say.
I mean, We could go back and insert something, but that's not really time travel.
That's work. See, that's not time travel. That's just work. And I hate work. You know me. So one of the things we wanted to chat about first is the role of technology in science fiction, because obviously, you know, the two tend to go hand in hand, right? We tend to think of mm-hmm. science fiction and technology being integral to one another, that if you don't have at least some version of high tech in your science fiction, it's not really science fiction. But I would say that to me, good science fiction starts with the story, the characters, and the situations that they are in and how they handle those situations, whether for good or for ill. And that all the tech stuff, not the podcast, but the stuff, what is tech, is sort of window dressing for that story. And that when storytellers take the inverse of that, where the technology ends up playing the central role and the story and characters kind of take a backseat to it, I think of that as what I like to call bad science fiction.
I tend to agree with you, Jonathan. I mean, there are occasions where I think that just the scientific technology, the fantastical technology in a story can be enough to make it fun. It might be a potato chip movie, but it can be fun just to watch that. Pacific Rim is a great example of that for me, where like watching the Jaegers interact is more of the story to me. The story of the technology is more of the story than the people, and I still enjoy it. But at that point, the technology is almost taking on a persona itself.
Yeah, yeah. And there is something to say about, you know, spectacle, right? Like, mm-hmm. spectacle can be entertaining. If it weren't, then we wouldn't have movies like Independence Day, right? All the big disaster films that are just pure spectacle for like an hour and a half. And I don't mean to really turn my nose up at it. I just don't think of it as being particularly artful. I think that if you have a really good story first and then you set it in a futuristic world, for one thing, that can give you enough distance as an audience that you can look at something that actually does relate very much to the way the real world works, but you've distanced it enough where you can think about it objectively without taking, mm-hmm. you know, the real world into account until maybe much further afterward. Like, Handmaid's Tale, I think, falls into that category. Although you could argue Handmaid's Tale has, in more recent years, become far more relevant. But you get where I'm going here, I think.
Yes. Yes, I do. But I want to talk less about Handmaid's Tale and more about handheld tales. So I want to start with, I would say, what is pretty integral to a lot of science fiction, which is laser guns.
Right. And we're not talking about necessarily a specific example here, just that laser guns or ray guns in general are kind of like the stereotypical symbol of science fiction weaponry, right? It's like the mm-hmm. pew pew laser. That's the go-to for science fiction.
Yeah. If we were to pick out specific laser guns, we'd be here all day.
Yeah.
Forever talking about them. So, Jonathan, so instead of saying this is how laser guns work in science fiction, because every science fiction tends to at least have their own nuances to how their technology works, are laser guns realistic in real life?
Not in the handheld versions that we see in science fiction, because in order to generate a laser of sufficient energy capable of delivering a truly devastating blast, you would need such a large energy source that you could not fit it into a rifle or a pistol format. So one of the biggest challenges we have with technology today is that when it comes to energy storage and releasing energy, we are limited by physics, you know, and I mean, we're limited by physics and everything, but physics has slowed that down. Like you've probably heard of Moore's Law, Ariel.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. Yes. That computers are, technically we boil it down to computers are getting twice as powerful every 2 years or so. But the problem with that is that energy storage doesn't follow that same trajectory. So we don't get to a point where like, oh, the batteries of today are twice as powerful. They can hold twice as much energy and they can release it twice as quickly as the old batteries. That's not how batteries work. It's just, it's an electrochemical process. You can't make it do more than what it physically is capable of doing. So that would mean that you would, if you wanted to use like a laser rifle or a laser gun, you would likely have to have that connected to a larger power source, potentially one so large that you couldn't easily carry it. Like maybe you could have a back mounted type of power source that you could wear as like a backpack. You wouldn't be able to carry much else. And even then, lasers wouldn't behave the way we typically see them in science fiction, right? You wouldn't get a pew. You wouldn't have a noise at all. There'd be no reason to have a noise. You'd have a noise from maybe the person who got hit by a laser. So
you wouldn't even have like a...
No. It's like turning on a flashlight, right? Like, or if you have a laser pointer, you don't get a noise with that. Well, I mean, you do with me because I supply it myself. I do the zoom, zoom noises. But also you wouldn't get those distinct beams, like those short blasts, which we'll talk about again in a second, I'm sure. You wouldn't get those. It would be an uninterrupted beam, just as you would get with a laser pointer. And assuming you don't have a lot of particulate matter, or if it's a bright day, you wouldn't even see the beam, right? You would see the spot where it hit the target, but you wouldn't see an unbroken beam unless there was like a lot of dust in the air, just like you wouldn't see lasers like in any of those movies, like a heist movie where they have to blow dust in the air so that they can see the laser grid. And then someone in a cat suit will do flippy flips through it. They don't work the way they do in science fiction.
So we couldn't, you know, take a laser engraver or laser etcher and turn that into a weapon.
I mean, you could do it Goldfinger style. No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. You could do it like lasers are powerful enough. Like you can get a laser powerful enough to do physical damage. We can use lasers to cut through stuff like steel. So we could clearly use it to do damage to a person. It wouldn't be like that super quick flash. I mean, heat still has to take time to transfer and have an effect, but you could get some vaporization, some plasmification of a site, which it could also create a shockwave, and that could do damage as well. So you could weaponize lasers. And in fact, the military has looked into it, but we're mostly talking about like vehicle mounted stuff, right?
Yeah.
Not handheld things.
Okay, so no laser guns, but what about blasters? So blasters are guns in Star Wars. They are they use particle beam energy and fire plasma bolts. So that's not laser light, that's plasma, which is different. And then go into, if it is possible, can you adjust that? So could you stun somebody with it versus killing them? All of which is possible with a Star Wars blaster. And then can you add different things to it to make them do different things? For instance, a Star Wars blaster has super cheap red bolts or orange bolts that are a little bit are used for like training, or blue bolts that are used ionized and used for machinery disruption. So
yeah,
how possible is that?
So these are great questions because there's a lot to pack in here, right? The blasters in Star Wars, first of all, they're called particle beam weapons, which already is kind of ridiculous. So the words particle beam tell you this is a beam of particles, and typically we talk about subatomic particles, like, you know, protons. Charged particles, typically, although you could have a particle beam of neutrons, it's just harder to get it moving. With particle accelerators, these use particle beams, but particle accelerators are pretty big. The Large Hadron Collider is more than 16 miles in circumference. The reason for that size is that it's using very powerful magnets to push charged particles in a circle to accelerate them near the speed of light. Now, they are particles. They have mass, so they'll never get to the speed of light. And we'll touch on that again later, too. but you get them up really super fast so that you collide them with another beam of particles that you have traveling in the opposite direction. So think of two different beams of particles going in opposite directions around a circle. Their paths are not crossing as you get that speed higher and higher and higher. And you're using very powerful, super cooled magnets to do this. And then ultimately you direct them at each other and some of the particles collide. And that's where you get these collisions that we then study. Well, if you had any way of making that into a handgun, we wouldn't need a 16 plus mile circumference facility, right? You wouldn't be able to speed the particles up to any appreciable level using something, again, the size of a handgun that doesn't connect to some other larger power source. So again, same power trouble that we had with the lasers. Now, you also mentioned they fire plasma bolts. So if you're Yes. talking about using the particle beam to generate plasma, that's not the most efficient way to create plasma. Plasma is ionized gas. It is the most plentiful form of matter in the universe. It's what our sun is made out of. S-U-N. Ariel and I don't have any kids.
No.
Yeah, that would, it would be shocking to me and to Ariel to learn that we had a sun. No, the sun. It works, you know, it's made out of plasma. And an ionized gas is powerful stuff. We'll touch on that again too. But making a beam or a bolt of it and having that bolt stay coherent, in other words, maintains its bolt shape as it travels through toward its target, is not really realistic either for multiple reasons. Plasma is a gas. So it's like if you blow out air, the air expands outward as it leaves the nozzle or your mouth or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you're blowing out air, you can't like blow so that a little bolt of air will hold its shape. You can get like interesting air gun type things that can create a sort of vortex effect that can travel much further. We've seen those in like, you know, novelty stores and stuff, but yeah. You wouldn't be able to really keep plasma together. As for the different colors, I think that they're relating that back to lasers. And in fact, the laser color does tell you a lot about the energy level of the laser, because you're looking at the spectrum of light. And the further toward the violet side you get, the more energy those photons can have. So red is actually very low energy. Infrared is even lower. You get up to violet and ultraviolet, you're getting into very high energy. You go beyond that, you start to get to stuff like X-rays and gamma rays, which are such high energy that if we're exposed to them for any length of time, they can ionize the atoms in our body, and we can have real serious problems like problems with DNA damage and stuff. So there is something to that. As for the blue beams, the ion cannon version of Star Wars, using ions to overwhelm machinery, there's something to that. When you look at an electromagnetic pulse or EMP, that is something that can disrupt electronics. It's essentially overloading the electronic circuits and causes them to either fry, so it's useless, or shut down. And we see that kind of happen naturally, like when there's a solar storm.
So it does make sense that a blaster could, in theory, cause an explosion from vibrations and stuff like that, it sounds like.
Well, from imparting energy. I mean, what you're getting to is imparting energy to a target, and or in the case of like the ion cannon, the idea of overloading an electrical system. You're essentially putting more juice into it than it can handle, and it shuts down. Mm. The word ion tells us that, because ion is a charged particle. Typically, you're talking about an atom that has either more electrons than it would normally have to have a neutral charge, so it ends up having a negative charge, or fewer electrons. So that means because there are more protons than electrons, you get a positive charge. That's an ion. Mm-hmm. So ion cannon tells us that this has to do with electricity, and that's why it works on robots and ships and shields and stuff like that. But it's supposed to be, you know, harmless when it hits a person. As for stunning and all that kind of stuff, I mean, I guess it just works for the needs of the plot, but there's nothing I can connect to. Like, a lot of weapons that are marketed as quote unquote non-lethal are really, it just means that In the majority of cases, the effect of the weapon is supposed to be one that incapacitates the target and doesn't kill the target. But very frequently, non-lethal weapons can lead to lethal consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds to me then that Star Wars got the bowcaster a bit closer to something that could be done in reality, simply from the fact that it is much larger. It's very, very heavy, although I don't think Chewbacca is 16 miles tall to carry a 16.
That would be a very tall Chewbacca.
Hadron Collider. You know, it uses metal and it uses magnets to work. So the way that a bowcaster works is you cock the spring and you push the trigger and it lets out a metal, what is called a quarrel, like a bolt or an arrow. It covers it in plasma and then it gets pushed super fast through two magnets that are at the end of the bowcaster. So I'm guessing that that is a little closer to reality, even though I'm also guessing that you can't exactly coat a metal bolt in plasma, the type of plasma that we're talking about in real life.
Yeah, yeah. You're exactly right. So, yes, you can use magnets to propel projectiles. I mean, there are rail guns. Railgun designs that use exactly that, right? The idea of using magnetism to pull and then perhaps push a projectile at great speed. So there's nothing necessarily wrong about that. But as you allude to, plasmas are a different matter. So again, unless you have something to contain the plasma or to hold it to the bolt, it would bloom and disperse immediately upon being fired. So you would have it just become this puff of very hot gas. And of course, heat dissipates very quickly too. So it's why, like, you can use a plasma torch without melting your face off, right? Like, people use plasma torches to cut through stuff. And heat, that's because heat doesn't transfer through air that effectively. Air's not the best conductor for heat. So you would have this dissipate pretty fast and it wouldn't stay around the bolt. So you wouldn't have that nice bolt that would go from the bowcaster to the target unless you had some way of holding the plasma there, which would mean either it would have to be contained within the quarrel, which presumably would burst upon hitting its target so that the plasma would cause extra damage, because plasmas do tend to burn very, very hot, or you would have to have some sort of electromagnets in the quarrel themselves to hold the plasma there, because since the plasma is an ionized gas and since it has free flowing electrons, it has an electric charge. So an electric charge means it also has a magnetic field, which means that with magnets, you can actually contain a plasma. But I can't think of any way where you would do that in a projectile. So while there are certain basics that work, the actual implementation would not.
Well, at least they got it closer. Even if they did then fudge it to have Han Solo be able to carry and fire a bowcaster, I don't want to know what he did to get the grip strength to be able to do that.
I think he must have just had a crazy mom energy, you know, like when the mom sees like the car is on top of her kid and she lifts the car up. So Han just had crazy dog owner energy for Chewbacca.
Yeah, nobody puts Chewie in a corner. Yeah. All right. So that means that I'm guessing that Star Trek phasers also are not that realistic because they're also particle-directed energy weapons, although they do have a steady stream as opposed to blasters, which shoot the bolts.
Yeah, yeah.
So does that make them more possible?
I mean, I don't think it makes it more possible. I think it at least makes it less of a pew-pew laser type thing than we typically see because it does tend to be a steady beam. You probably wouldn't see the beams. Star Trek is infamous for attempting to justify its technologies with lengthy explanations, partly because, I mean, there's a whole industry around writing technical books for the Star Trek universe. Same thing's true for Star Wars too, but
I'm a Trekkie. I'm not that much of a Trekkie.
Yeah. Well, and it's also one that talks about things like actual phase. I mean, phaser, depending on whom you ask, phasers are called that because they're either a mixture of the words photon and maser, so which is the same as light and maser, which became laser. Mm-hmm. but instead of saying light, it was photon, I guess because it sounded more science fiction-y. Photons are being the particles of light, and so you got phaser. Or some people talk about the phasing the beam of the frequency of the laser. Now, that would just mean that a phaser would be able to go from lower energy phases, like on that red side of the spectrum, to higher energy phases mm-hmm. on the violet side of the spectrum. But still not really possible. Again, we get back to that energy component. That's a big part of it. But yeah. also that Star Trek just relies very heavily on techno babble.
They do. But I will say they do have, it's a phaser. Their phasers do go from low to stun to disintegrate.
Yeah.
And they also do account for in Star Trek, that energy pull. So for instance, the cannons that they would put on their ship, because they got all kinds of phaser, weapons and devices. And
phaser arrays.
They can put a wrap in arrays, which shoot multiple phasers. So a phaser cannon, which can be rapid fire or regular, would be bolted to the ship and would pull from the warp core to channel power. We aren't going to get into warp cores yet, but at least they accounted for that need of a large power draw.
Right. Yeah, it's not like you put in two D-cell batteries in the back of the Enterprise yeah. and suddenly you can start blasting the Klingon bird of prey. That's a good point. Yeah.
So
that at least is something that is realistic in the sense that you would need to have a sufficiently powerful power source to tap into in order to generate and then, fire multiple times this powerful mm-hmm. beam weapon.
They also do use their phasers for things like drilling and heating, which we do know that lasers can do.
Yeah, we use them for those purposes. Yeah.
So a little bit closer to reality. They also have that you can track the nadium particles back to the phaser. Is it possible to track particles of a plasma burst or a laser back to what fired it?
No. I mean, no. Like, I don't know what you would be tracking because, again, plasma being an ionized gas, you could try and see if you could detect whether or not a specific gas was present in an area, but you're typically talking about a pretty small amount of gas in comparison to the gas that's in whatever environment you're in. If you're in a room or heck, if you're outside, forget it. So also like Star Trek, they're using these fictional particles, which helps. I mean, it really helps for you to explain how your science fiction technology works if you make up the stuff that's yes. making it work. So That also it plays a big part in it. But yeah, there's not any way that I can think of about how you would trace that back so that you would say, aha, I have found the phaser that killed Colonel Mustard in the study. I could be wrong about that, okay, but I can't think of how it would work.
Well, then I'm gonna give up on this train of thought, but I do have one more projectile weapon that I'm gonna hit you with.
I would suspect, first of all, I beg you not to hit me with that projectile weapon because I'm a delicate man. And also, I can't wait to hear it, but first, let's take a quick break.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's C-O-N-C-U-R.com. Working remotely, Where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, so I've been waiting. I'm not going to hit you with it.
Okay.
I'm going to throw it at you. Is that better? So there's this device called a weirding module, and this is a real corner case one, but I know it's one that you like because you like Dune.
Yes.
It is in the movie version of Dune,
yes.
Not the book version of Dune.
Yes.
Mainly because the director of the movie version did not want to have Kung Fu on sand for his movie. So he replaced the Bene Gesserit martial art, the Weirding Way, with the Weirding Module, yeah. Which is a sound-based weapon. Mm-hmm. That uses specific sound, turns specific sounds into attacks. For instance, the name of the hero in the story, Muad'Dib.
Muad'Dib, yes, as in we get the Atreides Freeman name, Muad'Dib.
Yes, yes, and so in the books they do use some sonic technology mm-hmm. in the later books mm-hmm. for detecting people underground and crowd control and things like that. But what about this sonic weapon that can?
That can break rocks.
That can break rocks.
Yeah, because in the scene where they first show it off, the protagonist has one of these. And the modules look really weird, too. They're these things that mount on, like, mm-hmm. the hand. It doesn't look like, it's not like a gun shape. But he uses it to destroy an obelisk of rock after other people have kicked it, punched it, and tried to cut it, and then yelled at it. And then he shows...
I mean, when I kick and punch rocks, it doesn't do much either.
Right. So he uses it to show that it can convert the sound of his voice into something powerful enough to shatter the rock. Just as a little side note about the martial arts thing, the martial arts in the book, it allows people to essentially teleport very short distances. They can move faster than they would physically be able to and appear on a different part of a person and punch them. And Lynch did not know how he could possibly pull that off and make it look good. In the post-Matrix world, I think it's entirely possible. So I suspect we'll see that in the upcoming movie.
I suspect so as well. You haven't watched the trailer for it, but...
I haven't seen that in the trailer. I've seen teasers. Maybe I haven't seen the specific trailer. So there's a trailer that shows the Weirding Way?
There's a trailer that shows somebody's head or hand or some part of their body vibrating at a
ridiculous speed.
I'm gesturing like you can all see it on audio.
Yeah,
but
I can tell you that she was, in fact, making her hand vibrate faster than the eye can see. Largely because her webcam.
I have the Weirding Way.
So the Weirding Module, using sonic signals as a weapon. This is not that far off from things that we actually have. We do not have anything that could shatter a rock obelisk like instantaneously through sound. However, sound is a physical phenomenon. So when we hear sounds, what we're hearing are there's fluctuations in air pressure, and those fluctuations affect our eardrums. And then we interpret that, we experience that as sound, right? So we're talking about vibrations. So you are talking about stuff moving. And while that stuff is just air and air has very low mass, you get enough air moving, that low, that, you know, enough of it is enough to do massive things. Otherwise, tornadoes wouldn't be a problem, right? I mean, air can do some serious damage if it's moving powerfully enough and there's enough of it. That being said, something as directed as that would be very difficult to do, but you can create directed beams of acoustic energy. And in fact, we do have materials that do this, and they have been used in weapons. The long-range acoustic device, or LRAD, is an example of that was developed by the military. The original purpose was to outfit naval ships with these, what amounts to a very powerful, very directed speaker. And you can point the speaker at a target. And because of the way the sound waves emerge from the speaker, it uses this special approach where the center of the speaker is very much directed at a target, and the outside of the speaker puts an out-of-phase sound signal to keep the central part focused. So it's almost like a laser. You can, you know, usually sound waves spread out from their point of origin, and they diffuse, so it's broadcast. This is more directed, and it was originally meant as a way to communicate to another boat that is far away that you don't have radio communication with, so you could say turn away or whatever, or you could use an alarm and use it as a deterrent, because you could use an alarm in the range of human hearing, make it really loud, really uncomfortable, pointed at, say, a boat of pirates, and deter them from coming toward a ship. And we have since seen various police forces outfitted with these as well, and have used them to notorious effect on things like protests for a method of crowd dispersal. But the problem is that these LRAD devices can put out sound at a decibel level high enough to rupture eardrums. And if you are in the direct path, it can be enough not just to burst your eardrums, which means you're deaf. It can also cause disorientation and nausea and I mean, some severe health effects. So while we don't have a sonic weapon capable of breaking, you know, a statue just by blasting some sound at it in a second, we do have things that can do some pretty serious damage. And if you tune a sound wave to the resonant frequency of a substance, meaning that when the sound hits it, it's hitting it at a frequency that the substance naturally already vibrates at, then it'll start to amplify that vibration. You can make a substance break apart that way. That's how we see like opera singers breaking crystal glasses. It's the same sort of idea. But again, it's a little more complicated than wearing a glove and humming in it and having it blast apart a rock.
Yeah, it makes sense that LRADs can cause some damage to people. Because when I punch and kick people, not that I do, that causes damage more than me punching and kicking rocks. So it seems like Dune is the closest to reality as far as projectile weapons. But I'm going to go back to Star Wars because they're losing so far in the reality wars.
Oh, well, I'm sure this will really help them catch up.
So I'm gonna veer off from projectile weapons because obviously they're losing there. What about handheld weapons, specifically a lightsaber?
The lightsaber.
It's a plasma blade. Listen, I know. Powered by a kyber crystal, which is actually both organic and inorganic, for anybody who doesn't know, which is probably like two people.
And somehow attuned to the force as well.
And attuned to the force, yeah. So if you're the dark side, you can force it to do your will, but it might make like, it might make the crystal bleed, or it might make you go insane, like Darth Vader had crazy visions from it. And it works in conjunction with a power cell and modulation circuits and an energy gate and a blade emitter shroud and an emitter matrix and a hilt activator. So you need the force to use it, but you still need a little button to activate it. What the goodness.
Well, I mean,
so they're pretty customizable, but is that possible?
So no. But no with some qualifiers, no with some qualifiers, because you can make something that can do stuff that a lightsaber can do, but it is not a lightsaber in the sense of Star Wars. Now, to be fair, Star Wars, I think, falls into kind of a fantasy science fiction. It's more of a fantasy than hard sci-fi. We've already talked about plasma and how that's an ionized gas and it diffuses after a while. But what you can do you got a couple of options. There's actually these guys that do incredible videos, Hacksmith Industries. I don't know if you've ever seen their stuff, Ariel.
Yeah, I have. I think I know where you're going with this,
too. Yeah, so they've got a couple different versions of lightsabers that they have built over the years. And one of them involves having a metal rod that comes out of a hilt, and then they use a means of heating up that metal rod to the point where it's glowing, so it's hot enough to cut through stuff. And in that case, you're like, well, it glows like a lightsaber. It can make contact with another lightsaber like a lightsaber, and it can cut through stuff like a lightsaber.
And it can cauterize like a lightsaber.
Yeah, and it can cauterize like a lightsaber. That is true. However, it can't extend or retract. I mean, it's a solid piece of metal. When you turn it off, you got to wait a while before that blade is, you know, not so hot that it would make wood just burst into flame if you touched it to it. So then they made one that they called more of a plasma lightsaber. I take a little issue with that terminology, but only a little. And they used a nozzle so that they could inject oxygen and I think propane together to create a mixture. And it lights and it creates a very controlled flame that is more or less lightsaber shaped. They could even control the color of the lightsaber by adding in different stuff into the mixture, because when you burn different stuff, you get different colors of flame, right? So
unlike a lightsaber where it's the kyber crystal that makes the color of the lightsaber, right, which I guess could be also additives to the crystal.
Yeah, I mean, the Sith were known for having synthetic crystals, which were the red ones, at least in some versions of Star Wars lore. There are a lot of different versions of Star Wars lore, so it's I don't even know what's canon anymore. So, but yeah, the blade that they made was, I would call it more of a fire than a plasma. I mean, granted, it was hot enough where I'm sure it was a plasma in that sense, but it wasn't like electrified or ionized gas in the sense of what a plasma typically would be. But it was hot enough to cut through metal. It could, it could extend and retract. The only thing that it can't do that a lightsaber can do, as we've seen in the movies, is if you had two of them and you swung them at each other, they would not have like made contact. Like you wouldn't have a physical contact where you'd feel that feedback.
Yeah.
They might combine into one enormous flame, which would be terrifying, but they would not behave as a lightsaber in that sense.
Yeah, I know that lightsabers can make contact. The weapons that lightsabers can make contact with, or the items that lightsabers can make contact with, other than like a certain kind of animal and a certain weave of fibers, which are actually used in other weapons and tools to combat that, is energy conducting weapons. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the weapons that conduct energy are the ones that can kind of make contact with the lightsaber without just being cut in half. It doesn't sound like either of these would be affected at all by that.
No. And also one other thing I was going to mention is that I could have allowed, because, you know, Star Wars has magic in it. It's the Force. The Force is magic, right? Mm-hmm. I could have allowed that a lightsaber only holds its form because of a Jedi using the Force to keep the lightsaber in that form, right? Because,
which is why you need the training.
Right, because otherwise it would be the other issues that we've had with, you know, the whole idea with plasma is that it blooms so quickly after being released unless you have some sort of powerful nozzle to keep it in the right shape. However, we know that's not the case because Han Solo picks up a lightsaber to cut open the belly of a Tauntaun, and Han Solo does not have a command of the Force. So we know that you can use a lightsaber, even if you're not a Jedi. It's just not recommended because they're so dangerous.
You know, you'd probably cut off your belt loop and your leg.
Yep.
Okay, so not lightsabers, but what about vibro weapons? Mm. So like vibro swords, vibro blades, things like that, that use high speed sonic vibrations to make a weapon more deadly through a vibro generator in the hilt. It sends sonic pulses that makes it vibrate. And kind of like, and they, even though they have serrated vibro weapons, it kind of makes it to me like the ultimate serrated weapon because it hits you and it causes mass destruction because of that vibration.
So we don't have weapons like this, but we do have tools that do this. It's absolutely 100% a viable technology because when you think about it, those sonic vibrations, like if you think about a tool like a saw, the way a saw works is that you drag the saw back and forth across whatever it is you're cutting, right? Bandsaw, handsaw, reciprocating saw, any of those things. That's that cutting action that can help you cut through various materials. A vibrating blade is essentially doing a saw motion. It's just doing it in very, very fast succession, and it's doing very small, you know, full length motions. It's not going as far out as like a bandsaw would or something. We do have these. There are ultrasonic knives. These ultrasonic knives are typically used for things like crafting. You don't use them for attacking enemy soldiers or something.
I mean, crafting sounds more fun.
And also, it can be a dog-eat-dog world among crafters. I mean, those makers can get mean.
You know.
So in those cases, it's used for stuff like cutting through rubber or plastic. Not typically the harder materials, but it's really good at cutting through softer materials without having to worry about the blade being super sharp. Like the blade needs to be sharp enough to make a cut, but it doesn't have to be like razor sharp in order to be effective because the ultrasonic frequencies are providing the mechanical action that makes up for a lack of sharpness on the part of the weapon, or in this case, the tool. Now, ultrasonic knives also typically are connected to a base station of some sort. So you've typically got like a little control station, and then you have a wire that goes to the knife, and that provides the energy needed to vibrate it. You've got a transducer in there. That's what is actually converting electricity into the vibrating energy you need to create those ultrasonic vibrations. But otherwise, I mean, like the principle is sound. Again, you run into the issue of needing to figure out where you put your power supply in order to run this for any appreciable length of time. Even with the lightsaber thing we mentioned earlier with the Hexsmith Industries, they had a backpack connected. They called it a proto-saber, which is in Star Wars lore as well. But they had a backpack that would hold the fuel that would feed into the lightsaber. And even then, it was only good for about 5 minutes of operation. If you wanted to use it for more than that, you had to hook up, you know, another like fuel tank of oxygen and a fuel tank of propane in order to do any appreciable work with it. Same sort of thing when you were getting to the energy sources for something like this. You would still have that issue. It would drain a battery pretty quickly if you're talking about an ultrasonic transducer that could vibrate a significant blade for a decent amount of time. So, but there's nothing wrong about the premise.
Okay. Star Wars, good on you. You got something almost kind of sort of right. All right. So, there's another weapon that does have a power source, albeit it's an arc reactor, Whiplash.
Yeah. Yep. From Iron Man 2.
Whiplash from Iron Man 2 or the comics uses an Iron Man Mark 29 armor
arc reactor
to make his armor, and also these electric whips that are electromagnetic whips that are made from the copper wires of the electromagnetic motor that powers his suit. So could you make copper wire electromagnetic whips?
I mean, you could make a...
That you could dual wield. It may come spring-loaded.
I wouldn't recommend it. Because, I mean, essentially what he's using are live wire electric wires as whips, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
So it's... You would have to have very high voltage going through them to do any significant damage the way you see in the movie. Like, it's essentially got to be high enough voltage to, again, plasmify the air that's immediately around the whips, because that's what it looks like. It looks like it's got a plasma sheath around it. So these would have to have an incredible amount of juice coming from them, which is where you get that arc reactor. The arc reactor that Iron Man uses, at least in some sources, is said to be able to provide 3 gigajoules per second of electricity, which is essentially a miniature fusion reactor. The nuclear reactors that we have today that we use for electricity are fission reactors. They split atoms. Fusion reactors fuse atoms together. They are entirely possible. We have some fusion reactors that are research facilities right now. The problem with fusion reactors is it takes so much energy to get that reaction started that the energy you get out from running the reactor is less than what it took for you to start it. So imagine, like, it took you 10 times as much energy for you to start an electric mower as it would for you to cut the grass by hand. You would sit there and say, like, well, yeah, I've got a device that cuts my grass, but it actually is more work to start it than it is for me to cut by hand. Same sort of thing with fusion reactors right now. But if we can ever solve that, it would be a massive help to our energy needs. That being said, it's also something that runs super hot despite the claims of cold fusion. So having it as something that operates your heart, not recommended. You'd die.
Yeah.
So
you probably wouldn't even want to really wear it.
No, you wouldn't want to be near it. You would want a lot of shielding with, like, active cooling systems between you and it. But moreover, it wouldn't be strong enough. Like, you can't make something that small. You can't make it at all right now. You can't make something that small, which means you don't have the energy source you would need to be able to create that incredible effect. So again, it's something that looks cool in movies, but is not practical and certainly not possible in the implementation we see in the film. So I'm sad that Whiplash gave me Whiplash.
Not at least without, you said, protection with a force field. So force fields and force shields.
I look forward to talking about this, but first I'm going to take another break.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices. And that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do,
so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, just before the break, Ariel, you said something about force shields. Are you
yes,
you thinking about stuff like the bubble?
Yes, force shields, force fields, whatever you want to call it. Barriers made of plasma, energy, other particles, usually without mass, to either contain mass or keep mass out, or to contain energy or to keep energy out. They work in so many ways.
Yeah. Yeah. In ways that are amazing and largely impossible, sadly. Yeah, because for one thing, like some of the force fields we see, they can protect against anything, right? Energy or physical.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just bounces off.
I
can't think of anything that would be able to do both. That being said, there are certain things that are akin to a force field. Like you could argue that the Earth's magnetic field is kind of like a force field, because the magnetic field is what helps protect us against certain charged particles that get ejected by the sun. And these charged particles have the potential to do some pretty serious damage to us if they were able to get to us. But through a combination of our atmosphere, which also serves as sort of a force field, and the magnetic field of the Earth, that doesn't happen. Now, what can happen is that we can get bombarded with energized particles that we will then actually see as a result here on Earth, because you've heard of the Aurora Borealis, right?
The Northern Lights?
Yeah. Yes. When we get hit by those sort of energized particles, you can get some really spectacular aurora. In fact, in years past, when we've had particularly eventful solar events, there have been auroras reported as far south as like Texas, which normally, you know, you can only see them if you're in the northern part of the globe, like, you know, up in Canada.
Doesn't feel that far north to me.
I mean, it's pretty far north from where we are, Ariel.
But that also makes me feel like Raising Dion is almost could maybe hypothetically be accurate, because everybody got their powers from an Aurora Borealis.
I mean, if that were the case, though, then you might get your powers next time you pass really close to your fridge if you happen to have a lot of permanent magnets attached to it.
I
get a lot of powers whenever I pass by my fridge. It's called the power of making yogurt disappear.
Yogurt. All right. Well, I don't have any more weapons.
Well, that's okay. I mean, we can talk about a couple of non-weapon sci-fi gadgets. And like we said, we have a lot of these. We know that this is a long episode. So let's just do a couple more, Ariel. And then after that, we'll regroup and see if we would like to do a part two to this.
Sounds good. Well, then if we're only going to do a couple, I'm going to focus on one of my favorite properties, Doctor Who.
Who?
Exactly. And Doctor Who is very, very famous for a sonic screwdriver, which is kind of like a miracle multi-tool. You know, each doctor creates their own, or Time Lord and some people who are not even doctors have created them with certain technological help. You know, they're only really thwarted by wood or deadlock seals, which are also very, very vague. And the occasional hairdryer can thwart a sonic screwdriver. That's Dr. Ten. And they can. So I'm going to start there, because even though the sonic screwdriver has grown to be this massively powerful, tiny little tool, the original was a tool that just was a beam of ultrasonic sound that would cause something to vibrate, like, let's say, a screwdriver. It would vibrate to loosen the screw and then use directional waves to turn the screw. Sonic screwdriver. Mm. That was the original form of the sonic screwdriver. That seems... It could also have an ultrasonic energy lance to use as a soldering iron. But that seems a lot more plausible than this thing that can self-repair and send out homing signals to find missing parts. Right. So,
yeah, yeah.
Very basic sonic screwdriver.
So, the basic sonic screwdriver you described, it is interesting. Creating the specific directions is a bit of a challenge, though not impossible. And we have seen people use sonic waves to do incredible things. There's a thing called acoustic levitation, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's using sound waves to make an object float. And it's entirely possible because, again, when you think about what sound waves are, it's really the fluctuations of air pressure. It's vibrating air molecules. And if you vibrate them in a specific way, you can achieve some pretty incredible results. Getting back to that resonant frequency idea, if you were to be able to detect what the resonant frequency of a specific surface was, and then you were able to replicate that at an amplitude, a volume high enough, you can make that thing start to shake itself apart. So in some ways, this kind of works. Like, you could create a vibration powerful enough or at the right frequency to cause something to shake itself to pieces. That's entirely possible. You would first have to figure out what that resonant frequency is. And a lot of stuff like is be kind of tricky to figure that out, and whether or not you could amplify it enough to do enough of damage to it is another question. But at least on that basis of the idea of using sound waves to move stuff, that's 100% legit. Well, using it to do everything else, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and that also takes out the whole thing of sonic screwdrivers don't work on wood, which occasionally they did.
Well, yeah.
Because wood is affected
exactly,
by vibrations.
Yeah. No, that's entirely true. Like, there's no reason it wouldn't work on wood, at least for that purpose. Like, wood takes vibration really well, actually. So, that honestly makes no sense from the perspective of this is working on ultrasonic frequencies, if it's truly a sonic tool. It's funny because we really think of it in storytelling terms as a deus ex machina, that idea of the god and the machine. This is the get out of jail free card that lets our hero get out of a seemingly impossible situation. The writers have written our hero into a scenario where they can't figure out any other way to get them out. So they have to use a tool that magically lets them out of that. Unless, but you know, once you create that, you can't make the genie go back in the bottle, right? So now the genie's out of the bottle. That's why you have the deadlocks.
So now and the hair dryers, just whenever you need it to not work, then you just throw something
right
in there.
So it's a tool that does whatever the plot needs it to do, and it doesn't work whenever the plot needs it to not work.
Just like superhero characters.
That's
how you get the Eternals. All right. So I'm just going to do one more piece of technology from Doctor Who. And don't worry, I know this one doesn't exist, but I guess my curiosity is whether we have anything that works similarly. So Doctor Who uses psychic paper.
Explain what that does.
Psychic paper works with fractal lines and weak minds.
Doesn't work on William Shakespeare, though.
No. He's not a weak mind, apparently. To project what the holder of the paper wants the viewer of the paper to see onto the paper, which means if you're not particularly strong-minded, you're not used to using the psychic paper, or you don't know you're using psychic paper, could mean that you're just putting out whatever random thoughts you're thinking that the other person can see, and that's a whole nother can of worms. But for the purposes of this conversation, do we have anything other than the power of suggestion that works similarly?
Ariel, get ready, because I think I'm going to surprise you with this one.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm braced.
So You've heard of brain-computer interfaces?
Yes, so I have, but explain them to me just anyhow.
Just for funsies. So a brain-computer interface is exactly what it sounds like. It's a way to connect a brain with a computer system. And typically it involves invasive surgery, like implanting electrodes into the brain of the person who's going to use it. So when we talk about implementations of this, it's usually with people who have lost mobility. They don't have control of their limbs. And it's a way to try and extend their mobility and their independence by creating a way to interface with computers and robotics, just using thought. So we started working with these technologies and have made some really interesting progress. And it all involves training the person to use the technology and training the technology to work with the person to get the output that you want. And so we have started to see this relationship between thought and computer systems that it's not quite the same thing, obviously. It's not the using of suggestion to implant an idea into the thoughts of people. It's using thought to control technology. However, there have been some early experiments that are still in the very early phases of using brain-to-brain communication with a computer system as the intermediary. So in other words, you get two people who have these brain-computer interface surgeries, and they are attempting to send meaningful information to one another without ever speaking. They may not even be able to speak. And we still have a long way to go with that, but there's some interesting, promising results to that, which could mean you could reach a point where one person could potentially implant a thought into another person. There's something else that I want to talk about if we do a part two to this that involves a different technology that talks about mice and fiber optic lines and the implanting of false memories. These are all possibilities.
That's a little frightening. But it does mean that, like, if I pick up some psychic paper or this technology paper, yeah, this paper that can take down these brainwave thoughts that I'm sending to it, that it's not gonna, if I'm unbeknownst, start spilling my dirty laundry and crazy thoughts to the world because I'm holding it, unless I've also had this brain interface surgery.
It's not something like we're not gonna magically develop telekinetic or telepathic powers. There's nothing like that. The power suggestion is a real thing. You know, it is possible to reshape people's memories so that to them, it seems as though they're remembering something that really happened when in fact the whole thing was fabricated. We've seen that happen where, you know, if you just repeat something enough times to someone, it gets to a point where in their brains, it's as if that actually has happened, right? Like that is something we see that with, you know, brainwashing techniques too, but it's nothing as sudden as glance at this piece of paper that otherwise will appear blank. However, to you, it's going to seem to be whatever it is I want you to see, right? We can't do that. Mm-hmm. But the elements are there where we start to see potential corollaries in the real world. It's just not going to appear as the exact implementation that we see in Doctor Who. Which is a shame because everything else in Doctor Who is 100% factual.
You know, I was going to say, look, Doctor Who is 2 for 2 on possible. So,
I mean,
vaguely possible.
In the thinnest slice of possibility.
In my mind, Doctor Who wins today's conversation.
It's certainly doing better than Star Wars right now. We've got a lot more of these, actually. In fact, I'm looking right now through our outline, and we haven't even touched on some of the stuff that we've got in our outline where we can come back and do another one. So, Ariel, if you're game, I'd love to have you back.
I would love to do
Excellent.
That.
Excellent. Well, something else we want to talk about before we sign off is that show that we're launching. It's launched today. You can find it on the iHeart Network. You can also find it wherever you get your podcasts. And it's called The Large Nerdron Collider. Ariel, I want to give a quick background on what that show is all about.
Sure. So this show started as my brainchild, where it was actually a video series where we would take some of the geeky things that Jonathan and I love and mash them up and kind of figure out what that world would look like. Not making any scientific technology discoveries of our own, sci-fi technology discoveries of our own, but a lot of fun nonetheless. Video production is so much work. We eventually decided to make a podcast sister to it, and iHeart picked it up. And so now we can share all that geekiness with you. We talk about current geek news. We talk about current geek topics, discussions like the Goonies effect, where do you love a movie because it's good or because you watched it when a kid? Why don't other people love that movie? Things like that. And then we do take those properties and we mash them up and we give you pitches on what those shows or properties
would look
like.
And the first few episodes are live right now, so you can check those out. You can go and subscribe and listen to those shows. I promise not all of them have me singing in them.
But a couple do, and it's amazing, and you do not want to miss it.
So that is something really exciting. I hope you guys check that out. And Ariel, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show. I look forward to us continuing this conversation.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to talk about a lot more sci-fi gadgets and technologies and what, you know, how they work within their mythical universe versus how would it, or if it would even work in our real world. We got a whole bunch of stuff like space travel and various types of mythical materials, everything from adamantium to mithril.
I think that might be a quick fire round.
That'll be
there.
A fun one. Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, if you say, like, does this really exist? And I say, no, that's pretty fast. But we can talk about what does make these materials special. And are there any real world materials that share those same kind of qualities? But not as exotic sounding. We don't have mithril, but do we have something that is like mithril, that kind of thing? And we'll cover all that in the next episode. If you guys have suggestions for future topics for tech stuff, reach out to me on Twitter. That's the best place to get in touch with me. That would be TechStuffHSW. That's the handle. And thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.